Good evening and welcome back to Editing Aloud. And I have with me, as always, a panel of South Africa's best informed journalists on a day in which Sikonathi Mashantsha, the ANC-NEC, seems to have said yes to Tito Mboweni's economic policy paper, to our great surprise. I mean, the ANC-NEC meeting this week, briefing media on Wednesday, what has it got to say about economic policy?
Hillary, the ANC and the government have got their back against the wall. They had absolutely no choice. Tito Mboweni presented the most logical. It's not even rocket science. It's the ordinary things that should have been done long ago. So they have finally said, yes, go ahead, Mr. Mboweni, let us get your economic blueprint working, which then means, in part, we are going to privatize, first break Eskom into three entities. The NEC has granted that. We are going to break South African Airways into three entities, but we're going to merge South African Airways with South African Express, both bankrupt entities, as it is, who haven't even published financial results. So the NEC has agreed with that, which then also means we will indeed get in private investors to buy into these entities. And Mr. Mboweni, we will sell off some of the non-core state-owned assets. They really had absolutely no choice. There's no growth, and the bonds are flowing out of the country. So,
look, Kanya, is there a danger that the ANC is agreeing just to kind of paper over the cracks and that they don't really support some of these controversial proposals that were in the economic policy paper that came out of the Treasury a few weeks ago?
I was just about to maybe to make that point really as well. I mean, as always, the trick is always about the implementation. I mean, we always say about how we never have any shortage of ideas in this country, any shortage of policies, any shortage of debates. The question is, what happens tomorrow, today? Because a lot of these things that Sikonathi talked about, they're hardly new, as he says. It's not brain surgery. This stuff has been discussed over years. It's a question, do we then have the political will to get them done? Because we don't seem to do even the simple things, the smaller things that aren't controversial, you know, like making it easier for foreign CEOs to work here without having to like leave the country after 3 years to go get new permits in India or whatever. I mean, those don't need to have a fight with COSATU over those things, but they're still not being done. So,
it does seem to be the issue about implementation. And last week, the president appoints his presidential economic advisory panel, which had been promised initially in the State of the Nation speech more than 18 months ago. Now, what do you think about the new panel? Is this a solution to any problem that we currently have?
Yeah, look, as Lukanya has just mentioned, I mean, there are no shortages of ideas. I think it's unnecessary to have another bunch of clever people to talk about what the problem is in South Africa. We all know what the problem is. We need to get on and implement and try and, you know, grab some low hanging fruit. There are plenty of them. We should be doing that instead of getting an advisory group of people to come and advise you as to what the problem is.
I'm actually going to throw a bit of a curveball here, because I do sometimes wonder, I mean, do we know what we're doing? Because some of the policies that we talk about don't cohere with some of the other policies on the books. I mean, we say we want to unbundle Eskom and create competition, but the prospect of any more renewables, for example, kind of government says no to. So the panel supposedly is going to bring some coherence and consistency and also advise on implementation. I mean, could there be a case for a panel of experts that says, you know, you talk about doing this and you talk about doing that, but actually they're not the same policy approach at all? Do you think that is an issue, Sikonathi, with Lukanya?
I mean, you made the point in your editorial over the weekend, so I think we actually do know that as well. You know? So I don't know whether we actually necessarily need like celebrity economists from the UK to come and tell us that. Now, I read your column last Sunday, and you make the point, for example, on competition policy, which is totally seemingly in contradiction with the government's goal of attracting investments. You know, I think Business Times also wrote a few months back about, you know, NASPERS and we buy cars and this kind of. So these are hardly like things that we need like people from outside to come and advise us. I mean, you look at some of the names in that panel, I mean, somebody like Roderick, I mean, how often has he been advising us on so many things over so many years? I'm surprised he still has the energy for it. Because
to
I mean,
say the same thing.
How many of them have actually been implemented over the years?
So it is a consistency thing where we speak with one tongue and we talk, you know, we act with another. But to what extent, Sekonati, is the implementation problem not a lack of will, but does the presidency know its way around government enough to make things happen?
Let's start here. Let's start here. Too many cooks spoil the broth. We already have more than enough experts and panelists and all sorts of committees advising a president who has been in business for 20 years before coming into the government the last 5 years. If he does not know how to kickstart economic growth from 0% or just above 0% right now to, say, 3%. What does he know? So you sit there and pretend to be working when you find people and give them something to do, and actually, what are the deliverables? What is it that you want from them? And even if there were deliverables, what do smart people, all of them, these academics, and that is what they know, theory in the classroom, in the lecture room. Has anyone in that panel ever run a business? So much as a spaza shop. We have great people like Whitey Person who are available to, or if anyone needed wise counsel in business, go to Whitey Person and ask him, why can't this country create jobs? Go to Rothschild and say, Why aren't you able to lend money? Go to the banks, the chief executive of the banks, and say, you sitting with so much cash in your balance, the chief executives of the top 40 companies, they will tell you what they have always told you for the last 25 years. You do not need to appoint a panel for that. You just need to get to make decisions as the government and as the president. Do not hide behind panels and pretend you're doing anything when you are actually just buying time.
In the meantime, Lucanio, bond market investors, the foreign investors who've bought our bonds and basically financed our kind of growing debt balloon, they seem to be fleeing.
No, definitely. I think Sekonati just mentioned that as well. It's also quite interesting because we tend to be obsessed with this country looking what the JSE is doing and what the RAND is doing. But then actually, in terms of actually being able to look at the financial state or the financial health of the country, because that's the bond market just tells you, right? Because that's people who are willing to actually lend money to the government on the basis that they will
the
get it back.
Sort of South Africa Inc. Exactly. It goes to the bond market.
More so than the RAND, because the RAND could be moved by techie or whatever. You can never really know for sure. But what we do know, just from the numbers in the Treasury, you will see that the proportion of these bonds held by foreigners, it was around about, when Ramaphosa took over, it was around about 40% proportion of like foreign holdings. And then it went up just in March, the month after he became president, 42.8. And as of like end of September, it's down to less than 37%. I mean, that's telling you something. I mean, that obviously the bond investors are looking at the story, they don't like what they're seeing, and they're voting with their money. They're obviously looking ahead to the medium-term budget. I think you've written about that, about the disaster that's probably going to be. And then obviously good mood is coming up. So a lot to worry about. So it's a good thing that the ANC is actually showing some initiative. They actually came with a unified statement. Remember the last meeting they had? What a disaster that was. The one that came
out. Don't get too excited, my friend. Don't get too excited. Isma Khashule will come out tomorrow and rubbish everything they've just agreed on now in 9 pages. Do not get too excited about that one, I can assure you.
We definitely miss the cynicism, yeah.
So are you as bleak about the economy as the rest of everybody?
There is very little to be, to be excited about, to be honest. If you look back at the data that's been coming out, the economy is not going to grow at more than 1%. And we should be growing given the inequalities that we have. Given the low base, given the market that we are, we should be growing much faster. And there are lots of people that need services, as Sekonati said. Speak to business executives, speak to Whitey Person, and ask them, what do people need? Why can't we grow the economy? And those are the people you need to be speaking to.
Yeah. The bond market, I mean, Eskom. Sekonati, which is a great favorite of yours, the flat of the bond market investors. To what extent are they fleeing from the Eskom risk? Because it seems that the Eskom risk is sort of really weighing on everything else, both financially and economically.
But remember, a large part of the Eskom risk is guaranteed by the government, which is the government itself increasingly unable to meet, or the rating agencies will make it impossible for the government to just sail through the whole thing. Eskom has not been sorted out, and it will not be sorted out.
And we just had a Fitch downgrade of Eskom from junk to deeper junk. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What was that about?
We are about six levels below investment grade at Eskom, which is the biggest risk of this economy. Now, that's not going to get better anytime soon until actually the 280 billion rand that Jabu Mabuza Titumba Winnie have been talking about has been paid over. You've reduced that 450 billion rand debt massively to Eskom right now pays about 60 billion rand cash just to service the interest on that. Yet it only generates 30 billion rand. So until you are able to service the debt from Eskom's cash flow itself, that's not going to get better. And of course, Eskom is not going to get the money. One, you've got the largest sections of this country not paying for the electricity, and the tariffs will not rise without killing the economy to match what they need. So bond investors have better. Of course, it's a lucrative return for them, but not in the face of a credit downgrade to complete junk for the sovereign.
What extent is it a South Africa specific thing? I mean, to what extent are global factors actually driving our markets versus necessarily South Africa specific factors?
We've got our own problems, but as we all know, I mean, there is also problems elsewhere in the other emerging markets. So if you're an emerging market investor, I mean, you would look at all of them South Africa will be in the firing line. But a lot of it, I mean, it has to do with our own problems as well that we need to sort out. I mean, as Lucanio has just, in his editorial, has mentioned, some of it could be, you know, we could just as well, you know, be doing our bit so that when we are in the firing line, we don't get hit the hardest.
Marcus Huster has lost his bid to stop a damages claim against him for 740 million rand. Tisetso, he's really in the firing line now on a civil suit this time. We're still waiting for a criminal suit.
Yeah.
Tell us the story with this case.
So this Cape Town businessman, his name is Jaap du Toit. So he sued him. He got into a share swap deal with Steinhoff at the time. So he used to own shares in PSG back in 2015. So he got persuaded, as he claims, by Marcus Huster that why don't you swap your shares in PSG and get those in Steinhoff? We are going to Frankfurt and it's going to be a blue chip stock there, or something along those lines. But as we all know, about 2 years later, Steinhoff shares imploded, crashed, and Steinhoff in the middle of cleaning up its balance sheet following that fraud. So this businessman Jaap du Toit is now suing
Marcus Huster for his losses.
For those losses. And the story that we carried today was about Marcus Huster trying to basically stall the case, or at best get it dismissed, but he lost it.
Now that he's lost, I mean, does this open the way for a whole bunch of other people who lost big money on Steinhoff's implosion to also take Marcus Huster and others potentially to court to claim damages?
That's a possibility, but people would probably look at it and say, what are we going to get? Because Steinhoff itself is suing him for about 800 million. I mean, he's out of pocket. If you were to sue him, you're probably not going to get a whole lot more. But, you know, people are going after Steinhoff. Steinhoff itself is being sued by a bunch of people, including shareholders, including Christo Visser himself, who basically wants his Pepco store back.
But Vukanyo, we still have not seen any criminal prosecutions being launched. Should we not expect a little bit more action on that front?
No, definitely. I think there's a lot of frustration, and not just about this case. Obviously, there's all these other cases on state capture and everything. I mean, we had a new director of prosecutions when February now, so it's almost like 8 months now. I would say, and it looks like the honeymoon is surely over by now, and people are beginning. It's almost like gramophoria in a way. You get an appointment, and people are thinking it's going to be overnight solution to everything. But it takes time really to build the capacity. It takes 10 years to destroy something, and then we expect it to be fixed in a few months. And because also, I don't think you want to go on a case like that without really being properly prepared, and then you get an embarrassing loss, or the case gets thrown out on a technicality, those are spinner cases. So we don't want any of that. But I think people are rightly also impatient. You just read the newspapers, you read the letters pages, and people are saying, where are the prosecutions are coming?
Yeah, and we don't give people very long honeymoons, mm-hmm. but we need a signal.
Definitely. Something is happening or something. Because they've been very quiet as well. They're not even sort of laying the ground in a way.
I guess the question is, does the Hawks or even the NPA have the capacity to prosecute cases like this? It's a high-level financial crime. And it's just as much as state capture is, it's also very difficult to prosecute, particularly if you don't have the skills and the capacity within the...
Why does it not take private sector skills? Because there have been offers, surely, from the private sector.
Yeah, I think people in business have offered to fund prosecutions.
Law firms have offered to support.
I think somebody's even come up with the idea, you go ask all the QCs that you see, ask them, pro bono, just do one case each,
But are there risks? If you think about the NPA taking services from one firm or money from one corporate, are there risks to that kind of an approach? Could they be managed?
There definitely are risks to that kind. The very reason that we're discussing state capture, that would be state capture. Except in this instance for the good of the country.
And could it be managed?
It definitely can be managed, but you need parliament to actually pass a law or amend some laws to allow this private prosecution, this kind of private funding of the National Prosecuting Authority and indeed the Hawks themselves. Now, a lot of the 400 people in parliament are themselves the criminals accused of state capture. That would be the first time that I see Turkey's vote for Christmas if they actually allowed the NPA and the Hawks to be strengthened so as to prosecute them, because the politicians, it starts there, that caused the mess in which we are right now. It's in their interests that nobody is being prosecuted for the simplest of crimes. A whole bank was stolen, VBS Mutual Bank, and the suspects are there in parliament. The suspects would have to agree to take in skills from the private sector in order to pursue them. We know that's not going to happen. But matters like Steinhoff are the most complicated and difficult. The simplest, I repeat again, is VBS Mutual Bank. But the suspects are in parliament. And you would need the suspects to amend the law in order to accept private donations.
There do seem to be some moves, as I understand it, to work out how you could bring in private sector partnerships without running the risk, as you say, of state capture.
You could do, for example, have a blind fund of some sort where, it's not a case of taking money from, Secondati and from Liberty, whatever it is, that everybody just puts money into a pot and then you actually don't even know where the money comes from. You have to have some kind of control where the money comes from, but you wouldn't necessarily be getting money from an individual business or an individual human being. So it'd be some kind of pot where you just... And those people don't have any control on how it's spent. They don't get to decide who gets prostituted.
But speaking of taking money on the one hand and Steinhoff on the other, Musi Maimane, allegedly took a car from Steinhoff, took a house from somebody else. Is this career limiting or even career ending for the DA's Musi Maimane?
I mean, it's interesting, like I was saying, like, I mean, it's interesting about why this is coming up now and where it's coming from. I mean, the fact that both these stories have been leaked to one particular newspaper, I'm interested reading in terms of the political background. I mean, the political background, of course, is that that's how bad they did in the elections. And I think they've got a federal council coming up soon, and we've got local government elections in a couple of years. So obviously, there's knives are set up. I mean, there was even today, on the radio, like Helen Zille and everybody, like IRR, getting involved in discussions whether Musi should be removed or not. So the political context is very interesting.
I disagree. I disagree. The point in question here is Musi received a donation. Well, the DA received a donation from Marcus Yoste of Steinhoff, and we know how that Steinhoff thing went, subject of a criminal investigation, at least in Germany, not here. We know how it went. About 300 billion rands of other people's money was lost. Musi Maimane lives in a house that he lied to Parliament about and said it's his own house. Now he's not able to come out and say, actually, I pay rent to Vessel Jacobs, who is based in KwaZulu-Natal. This is the lease agreement we signed. Here's my banking detail. I've been paying this market-related rent for the past X number of years that I've been living in the house. The question is the ethics of Musi Maimane. Is Musi Maimane guilty of corruption in not declaring the financial benefit?
In other words, you're worried about the lying.
We worried about the lying.
The alleged lying, the source of the funding so much.
We know money coming from Steinhoff to help with the election campaign, that could be said to be a political donation, clear.
Would it have been okay if it was Anglo-American for the sake of argument?
Yes. So they returned the vehicle.
So it's not the source of the money, it's the way in which
Steinhoff one is
the
clear,
DA leader has
money. And the DA, whether Musi Maimane resisted or not, finally they returned the Toyota Fortuner to Steinhoff. The question now is, excuse me, just like we ask of Julius Malema, how much are you paying rent in that house that belongs to the cigarette smuggler? How much, Mr. Maimane, are you paying? If you're not paying rent, what do you do for that gentleman? How are you not able to demand accountability from Cyril Ramaphosa about donations when you are receiving donations on a daily basis? That is the question, and Musi Maimane has done absolutely nothing to remove the doubt about the ethics of what he's doing, and indeed whether he pays any tax on those benefits.
Is it a perk from a South African revenue?
Yes, and as a member of Parliament, he's not supposed to be receiving any financial benefit from anywhere. He shouts at the loudest, he shouts his lungs out on about Cyril Ramaphosa, about Julius Malema, about Floyd Shivambu, who are also accused of receiving monies illegally. He's done the same thing, if all of these are true. And why has he not come out and take not only his part into his confidence, but the people of South Africa and say, the matter is simple, here's my lease agreement, here's my bank statements, I've been paying my rent.
So finally, a big subject in a very short space of time, the health market inquiry, just in our last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Should we be worried, as if we're users of private health care, about what this means? Is it going to be better for the users of private health care or worse? I mean, are we being ripped off? Is this health market inquiry a solution to all our problems?
I'm not sure if it's a solution to all our problems, but it did lay out with solid research and, proper engagement and consultation as to what is wrong with our South African private healthcare industry. I mean, one disturbing thing that came out of that is that there is a so-called over-servicing, which essentially means that the private healthcare sector is broken.
I'm just rushing you because we've got 1 minute left. Okay, so there is
over-servicing for example.
But the answer that the inquiry seems to propose is more regulation. Is that something that is desirable?
Yes. I mean, a lot of people have said that the previous minister, Aaron Motsoaledi, was seen more as a public health minister, not the health minister of South Africa. So there has been, we have neglected that part a little bit. But at the same time, there has been greed You know, you can't have, as a hospital, you can't have somebody stay in bed longer than it's necessary. It's just so you can meet your targets. So that's what the...
Well, ideally one won't end up in hospital.
Yes.
Or needing the healthcare, but
yes.
At some point everybody will. And that's all we have time for. Thank you very much for joining us. Please join us again next week for the next edition of Editing Aloud.
Cool.